Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Another episode. Today I will be talking about basically what it was like to be, you know, from my experience of what I've seen, what it was to be in Argentina back in 86 and what that meant for Argentina and Argentinians. And then also I talk about my experience with soccer and being Argentinian in another country and what this World Cup means to us as Argentinians. So hopefully you guys enjoy it. I know it went a little bit too long, but I think it's worth it. It only gets better as it goes deeper and deeper into the conversation, or the single conversation. But hopefully you guys enjoy it. So without further ado, here's the episode. Hey, what's good, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of 442. Once again, this is your boy Christian, and today we're just gonna keep it simple, or we're just gonna go off the dome, and I'm just gonna say, just talk about some of my feeling, emotions, and everything that kind of revolves around soccer, my life, and what this Argentinian team is doing in the World Cup, you know, which is the biggest stage in the world ever. I mean, in sports, basically, and what the team is doing, where my feelings are, where my head is at. I really don't know, so I just came here to rant. I know that I missed last week on the episode, but here we are. I've been doing every single day that there was a game for the World Cup, I would jump on Instagram Live, and I would do like, kind of like a breakdown of the day. So if you haven't checked those out, if you want to check those out, I know it might be a little bit late now, but you know, there were fun little videos that I was doing just to kind of stay up and keep some content going. And not only keep some content going, but just kind of stay on top of these games. So those were, that was like one of the only ways that I would actually have to pay attention to the games and was able to watch, you know, some highlights or something like that of every single game. So literally every single game that has happened in this World Cup, I have watched at least 5 minutes of it, which is an amazing feat, you know, coming from, you know, from a guy that, like I always say, has a full-time job, a full-time family, and you know, I still try to make ways to be able to watch the beautiful game, be able to watch what's going on in the world, and be able to kind of share my thoughts and feelings about, you know, what's going on soccer wise you know, when it comes to like just the game itself as tactics or whatever it may be, or even just, you know, just sharing my ideas on what I think on specific, you know, topics, or you know, whatever it may be. I know that this year, maybe, or this World Cup is my first World Cup kind of covering, you know, the World Cup as a somebody that talks about the World Cup, and some people listen to me, but you know, just kind of prepping myself to what 2024 will bring in Copa America, which super great news that we're having Copa America here in the United States once again. So 2024 is going to be amazing for me, because I'll be able to use, you know, the experiences that I've done, or everything that I've done this World Cup, and just kind of turn it up a notch. 2023, I'm going to be investing in myself in a way. I'm going to start to learn new things. I'm going to just, you know, try to make everything kind of look better and more professional for everybody watching and listening, and just kind of make it more entertaining. Honestly, you know, we're in the era of TikTok, and we're in the era of like short videos and short clips, and I'm not, you know, I'm gonna try to keep, you know, give that content as well, but I'm a guy that likes really long, you know, winded, you know, conversations, long winded talks, and you know, if you listen to any of my stuff, you know that I can talk for ages, right? So I don't know if I'll be jumping on TikTok, to be honest. I know it's kind of like in the plans or not, but you know, for sure, you know, the whole podcasting thing and talking to people will be kind of, you know, on crack on 2023. I really want to get a lot of people on the show and just kind of talk about life, talk about soccer, talk about how that, you know, those two connect. So I'm hoping to have more interviews next year than I did this year. Honestly, there's a lot of stuff going on. Like, not a stuff going on, but like some people have passed away in the soccer world, or at least in my immediate soccer world, that it just kind of has changed my mind in the way that, you know, maybe I've been waiting too long to get some people on the podcast, and some of them, you know, literally have passed away and I wasn't able to get to them because, you know, I didn't make the time for it, or I was just kind of too shy or whatever it may be to like ask them to come on. So I'm going to try to make, you know, 2023 the year where I shoot my shot like I did last year. And honestly, I might have another podcast towards the end of the year to kind of give you a snapshot of that. But I guess that's going to be a conversation for them. But, you know, I just wanted to say that, I guess since I'm in that topic of people passing away, some person that I had on the podcast, Gabe from Boca in English podcast, you know, he covers everything Boca Juniors in English here in the United States. His dad passed away, you know, literally a couple of weeks ago. So it sucks, you know, those things suck. And then we had the founder, basically the guy that founded Space City Lions, which is the Aston Villa supporter group. He also died, I think, last week, and it kind of came as a shock to everybody because the guy, you know, he was a young guy, and I guess it seems like he had some health issues or whatever it may be, but he ended up passing away, and it was just kind of like a shock to everybody in the group. And, you know, I'm not really active as much as I want to because of work, and, you know, the times of Premier League games are on the weekends in the mornings, and I usually work and stuff like that. And so I was able to meet him, and I was able to like have conversations with him a couple of times that I went to the bar. And, you know, just it kind of hits you hard because it's like, damn, I'm not going to see that person anymore. And, you know, and he was such an important role when it comes to the soccer scene in Houston. You know, it would have been great to have him on the podcast and him showing his story of how an American can fall in love with an English team and create a whole group for them. And he had never been to, you know, to Villa Park, you know, the stadium over there. And it was crazy because in 2023, he was planning on going to Villa Park, like him and another couple of guys. They had, you know, a plan together. You know, they were just gathering the final details to make it to Villa Park next year, to go watch a game and, you know, visit for first time and be amongst the people, you know, that he loves so much, you know, as a soccer fan. And, you know, that happened. So it was kind of like a shock. But, you know, 2023, I hope to have more people. You know, if you're listening and you're a soccer person or you know somebody that you would, you know, would like to hear about, let me know. And I'll hit them up and see if we can, you know, arrange some time to have them on the podcast. So we can just kind of share stories and stuff like that. But, you know, so those are the stuff that has been, I guess, happening, you know, in the last few weeks amongst this World Cup, which is also amazing, you know, especially, like I said, being Argentinian, this has been a great time for me. I've been happy. I've been nervous like heck. That Netherlands game, I was a nervous wreck the whole entire day, you know, till the end. For this one, for the Croatia game that just happened today as I'm recording this, I wasn't as nervous, to be honest with you guys. I actually wasn't nervous at all. I really thought Argentina had a good chance. And I don't know, I just wasn't nervous. And as soon as Argentina dropped two goals, I was like, well, you know, I guess my feelings were correct, right? But I started thinking about, you know, what this means for people in Argentina, and I'll probably have some Argentinians on the podcast to kind of, you know, share their stories, and maybe in English or in Spanish as well, because, you know, some of them don't speak English. But I just want, you know, I want them to share their feelings and the emotions, because, you know, I'm here in a little cocoon, and, you know, I watch the games by myself, and, you know, Twitter is one thing and Instagram is another thing, and, you know, some people that have Facebook, you know, you see there what's going on. But it's cool to see, and it's cool to have like perspectives from other people that live in different, you know, parts of the world. Like, I have cousins You know, I say this on my other shows, but I have cousins in Australia, and you know, it's like, I wonder how they feel, you know, because they have a similar story than I do. You know, they were born in Australia, or they grew up in Australia, but obviously their roots are Argentinian. So it's like, how do you live, and how do you feel the, you know, the success of this soccer team? Literally, I mean, it's a soccer team, but it changes the mood of people, you know. So, you know, we'll see if we can get them on the podcast as well and kind of talk to them and give them their, you know, for them to give us their thoughts. So you guys kind of have an idea of what, you know, what we crazy as Argentinians feel like, because, you know, a lot of people, you know, some people hate, and it's completely understandable. You know, I hate other people, you know, like, not hate, but, you know, it's like one of those things that I don't want Brazil to win anymore. You know, it's just the rivalry stuff, and there's a lot of people out there that don't want Argentina to win, you know, and funny enough, today, like, some people were like, man, is there any way that Messi can win, but not Argentina, you know, because I think everybody, you know, except those few haters out there, everybody's, like, in a consensus that they want to see Messi kind of win the World Cup. It's like he earned it type of way, you know, he has won everything in his life. And the only thing that he cannot win, or it seems like cannot win, is, like, you know, the pinnacle of the sport, which is a World Cup. And he was so close in 2014 that, you know, now it seems, you know, reachable. I mean, he's in the final already. So, you know, the only thing that separates him from the holy grail of soccer is 90 minutes and a team in front of him, right, that wants the same thing. Because, you know, if you're gonna play France, you know, they're gonna want another cup. You know, they want their third one, as well. Well, do they have two? Yeah, they have two. So, I mean, they want their third one as bad as we do, you know. And you know, if you play Morocco, I mean, Morocco's already making history by making it to the semifinal. They could care less, you know, about who's in front of them. They're just gonna put their head down and work, you know. And not only for Moroccan people who. Man, I honestly didn't even know there was that many of them, you know, nothing against you guys, but it would be cool also to have somebody from Morocco and give them, you know, give your experience as a Moroccan, you know, like, African teams and African nations, you know, out of anybody that you would think, you wouldn't think an Arabic country, you know, you're going to think of, you know, mostly known as African teams, you know, West African teams, as, you know, Senegal, Nigeria, or whatever it may be, you know, Ghana. You know, those are the teams that we usually think of when we think Africa, South Africa, you know, Cameroon, teams like that, you know. But whenever you think of the Arab world, you know, when you think of Morocco, when you think Algeria, when you think Syria or Egypt, you know, you kind of put them into the whole Middle East, you know, region, just because of their language. And obviously they look different, you know, even though, you know, some of them might have some features and some of them might have other features. So you kind of distinguish them by that. But it's cool that to see that Morocco can represent not only a nation, but like a group of people and also a continent, you know. So it's cool to see how, you know, the diversity and how literally how the sport unites just people, period, you know. Like, you've seen celebrations in New York. Glenn Davis today was talking about, you know, people celebrating in Houston, and it's just cool to see, man. And it's going to be cool to see just whoever wins, you know, how their people react, how their fans and, you know, the people that love that country or love, you know, anything that comes out of there, you know, how they react. But me as an Argentinian, I guess we can get into it. Another discussion that people talk about, you know, they try to compare the 1986 World Cup to this one. They try to compare Maradona to Messi. They try to compare, you know, make those comparisons of who's better or who has it easier or who did it better, and, you know, and stuff like that. And the more that I think about it, you know, it's one of those things that you just have to kind of learn to separate in a way, right? Just because 1986 was such a different world, and, you know, the World Cup in 1986 was, you know, at the end of a war that we had with England over the Malvinas, the Falkland Islands. I can't even pronounce that one, but, you know, Argentina and England went in a small war, had a small war back in the 80s, early 80s, that, you know, the English at the end of the day kind of won. You know, I don't want to get into political shit, but, you know, it just got messy. And, you know, a lot of Argentinian got, you know, young men that were recruited and, you know, basically called up for the military. If you were over, you know, 18 or over, you were literally called up to go to fight, you know. And, you know, my dad always tells me that, you know, he got lucky because, you know, he was a bit younger. He was like 15 or something. But, you know, he was like, they got to a point that, you know, even at 15 years old, I thought I was going to get sent, you know. And, you know, and I've talked to people, you know, older folks from that, you know, a little bit older than my parents and my dad's age. And, you know, be like, man, he was like, I was a number off, because they would like send you by your, I guess it would be like by your, what's this number? Your IRS number? Not IRS, but what's this number? I keep, the number that you have, that you're assigned at birth, basically. So in Argentina, everybody has the same number, right, that they put on your documentos. And, you know, they would be like, okay, from number, you know, let's just say, for example, from number 1,000 to 2,000, you guys are going to the Marines. From number 3,000 to 4,000, you guys are going to the Army. And that's how they did it. It's not like you picked and choose where you want it. You know, they just send you there because of your number. My dad, actually, he was in the Argentinian Marine because that's the number that he had. You know, that's his number, and he just got sent to the Marines for a few years to kind of do the, like, basic training and stuff like that. It was mandatory back in that day, back in the 80s, especially after the war, because they didn't know if it was going to, you know, come back or whatever it may be. But, you know, you have to go for a couple of years at least to do mandatory. They took it out now. I think in the late 90s, they got rid of it. But in the late 80s and early 90s, everybody had to go do some military time. And you were just kind of thrown in there. And, you know, whatever happens, happens. And if we go to war, guess what, buddy? You're going to war. So it's cool to see. And so when you go to the backdrop and the history of what Argentina was in the 80s, you get to experience what that meant for the whole country that Argentina won. First of all, not only Argentina winning, period, but the fashion that they won, right? The way that they kind of got to it. Because in the way, they had to play England, you know, and I think everybody have seen the goals, you know, the two famous goals from Maradona, the hand of God, and then the one that he makes the run from midfield, taking on like 7-8 dudes. Those two goals not only are memorable in Argentina because, you know, not only memorable in soccer because of how good they were or how sneaky they were, you know, in the hand of God. You know, the creativity, you know, even though it was illegal and whatever, you know, you can bring your arguments to the table about, you know, being illegal and, oh, we're cheaters or whatever it may be. But you just have to, like, soccer is about being creative. And if you're going to cheat it, you don't get caught. You know, that's just part of the game. You know what I mean? Like, who doesn't, you know, people flop all the time. And, you know, you can make arguments for cheating. Obviously, you would rather not see people cheating in the game, and you would rather, you know, people be honest and fair play. And, you know, that's something created by FIFA, fair play, because they were tired of, you know, people being sneaky like Maradona type thing. You know, it's like, let's try to have some type of morality, you know, in the game, and try to be civil about it. But, you know, even you playing in your leagues, you know, how many people have you met that are just straight up cheaters and, you know, just hurtful people that just are there to hurt people or whatever it may be, right? So Argentina, coming off the heels of a war with England, you know, you have that thing. And Argentinians, they see, like, we kind of see, you know, this might be exaggerating, but we kind of see our soccer team or, you know, national team as, like, as our army in a way. You know, they're the biggest representation that we have, you know, of our country. Like, there's, you know, I don't know, the United States has, I don't know, I can't think of anything that kind of relates to it, but, like, the main export that we have as a country is soccer. I mean, just think about anything else, you know. I don't know, Japan, Japan has electronics or whatever it may be, you know, smart people, you know, out of the United States, you can think about like NASA and just like rocket ships or, you know, arms, you know, weapons. Like you think of Israel, you think of weapons, you think of Germany, you think of cars, you know, you think of Italy, you think of food, you think of England, you think of like, I don't know. Whatever it may be, you know, every country usually has an expert that they contribute to culture, period, right? And the only thing, well, not the only thing, because Argentina has a lot of cultural richness that, you know, we could dig in and just kind of find it, right? But one of the main exports of culture in Argentina is soccer. And soccer itself, you know, in the world has become a culture of its own. I mean, and nowadays, like, there's like a culture of how soccer players dress. You know, how, you know, sportswear has become part of the culture. You know, wearing a jersey on your day-to-day basis without, like, not in a soccer game has become a regular thing. Like, you can wear a jersey to the store and, you know, as a shirt, and people are not going to question, you know, it's like, oh, this guy's going to go play soccer. Maybe he's not. He's wearing a pair of jeans, you know, under it. So, like, soccer has become so much part of the culture that Argentina has become a main expert of players, you know, of stars. And, you know, starting with Leo Messi, I guess you can say, you know, here. But back in the day, you know, we saw our soccer team as warriors, as, you know, the representation of Argentina to the world, you know. And I think that we've seen that since probably earlier than that. But I think the 80s solidified Argentinian players, especially with Maradona being one of the only few ones in that time. And, you know, after the 80s, the 90s were a huge boom of, you know, of export of soccer players to Italy, to not a lot to England, but like a lot of players to France, not a couple of France, but mainly the Spanish league and the Italian league. The Italian league was like extremely popular in the 90s, you know, with a bunch of really good teams. And a lot of soccer players that came out of the 80s went into the 90s to play in Italy, you know, Batistuta, you can, you know, just kind of name them, you know, like the greats from Argentina from the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, the guys that I grew up with in a way. So us winning that cup and the way that we won that cup meant a lot for the country, especially, like I said, coming from a like a defeat in war, a defeat in economy, a defeat in like morale, you know, because the people were down, you know, people were losing kids left and right. Also, Argentina had just left a dictatorship in that war. I mean, part of that war got started because of the dictatorship. So, you know, not, like I said, not to get too political, but, you know, a lot of people were suffering. A lot of people were going through a lot of shit. And in soccer, I forgot where I heard it, but in Argentina, like people, because the other day I went to dinner with my wife and she was asking me, like, you know, why do Argentinians love soccer so much? Like, what is it that makes you guys, you know, makes you guys go crazy and have so much emotion for it? And I couldn't, you know, it's hard to explain something like that because at the end of the day, it's just a game, you know, like it's just a sport. It's just something that, you know, it's not that it's meaningless, but, you know, if you go to the basics of it, it's meaningless, you know, like how can you let a soccer game played by, you know, 22 dudes that do not know your name? Like, how do you let that dictate, you know, how you feel, how you're going to go in your day-to-day basis, who you fight against on Facebook, you know, like stuff like that. Who do you like? Who do you hate? You know, you form alliances, you know, with different countries. Like right now, Argentina's and are really big with Bangladesh. Like, I don't know how, where that came from, but a lot of Bangladesh people are for Argentina, and it's amazing. And it's weird, but it's amazing, you know? And like those two countries are kind of like building something off the heels, you know, off the backs of these players, and it's weird, and but it's crazy. But something I told my wife was, soccer for us is it's going to the stadium, ir a la cancha, como se dice en Argentina, like we say in Spanish. It's a vacation for poor people. It's vacation for poor people. And she was like, "What do you mean?" And I was like, well, think about it. Like, what do you do on vacation? So you basically unplug yourself from reality, from real life, from your job, from stress, from maybe your relationships, you know? Maybe you just have a crazy spouse or whatever it may be. Maybe you should get divorced if you do have a crazy spouse. But, you know, like when it comes to your life, your job, your stress, your responsibilities and everything like that. When you go to the stadium, when you watch a soccer game, like for those 2 hours that you're there, everything just fades away. Everything is just out of mind, out of sight. These dudes are in complete control of your, you know, of your mental health, of your, you know, of your emotions. And, you know, hopefully it's good. You know, sometimes it's bad. I mean, me growing up in Houston, Texas, and being a Houston Dynamo fan, you know, it's not great all the time. But, you know, you find, you know, good things to kind of like, you know, grab yourself about. You like, you know, I'm proud that in Houston, even though we might have a bad team, we have not a huge fan base, but the fan base that we have it's good, you know, and you know, they might have their flaws, but I think, you know, when it comes to your experience in the stadium, we might be one of the best, you know, in stadium like presence that, you know, in the league, honestly. And, you know, maybe some of you will disagree or agree, but in my opinion, like, I feel at home when I go to, you know, to PNC Stadium. When I get there and I hear the drums, when I hear the chanting, like I said, it might not be huge amount of people, it might not be the biggest, but when I see, you know, flags waving, when I see people chanting, when I see people, you know, waving their arms, I feel like I'm in Argentina. And I've never been to an Argentinian stadium because when I came to the U.S., I was really young. And the way, you know, where I lived and the way my family worked, we were not able to, like, travel to the stadium or whatever it may be, right? But
hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
But I've my soccer life, you know, living where I lived, and knowing that there were like soccer stadiums, like lower division soccer stadiums around, you know, where I lived, and I would see them, you know, maybe not daily basis, but, you know, every once in a while we had to travel to go somewhere else to go play. And, you know, you would cross, you know, this stadium for this third division team or this stadium for the fourth division team or whatever it may be. But, in Argentina, stadiums are everywhere. And on the weekends, you know, you would see people literally migrating from one neighborhood to the other to go to stadiums. So, you know, wearing their colors and you know, with their flags and their drums and everything that came with it. So, you know, going to PNC kind of brings you back to those childhood memories. So, you know, going back to the whole point of being the poor man's vacation, that's what it is in Argentina, you know, like, soccer is a sport of the people, you know, by the people, for the people. And, you know, a lot of the clubs in Argentina are owned, you know, quote unquote, by the people. Like, you become a member of like, you, a socio, you know, a partner of the club. So, at the end of the day, like, there's elections where you pick the president of the club who makes the decisions. And there's literally people that run to become president of clubs. Right, so you go and you pick whoever you think is going to do the best for your club, and it's very like democratic here in the United States. Obviously, the idea is a little bit different. You know, it's kind of like a McDonald's. Somebody owns it, and then they just kind of franchise it out, and then there's owners, and they sell, they buy, you know, whatever seems fit for their pockets as well, you know, because at the end of the day, it's a business and it's an investment for them. And some owners, have we seen in Houston, you know, some owners care about their people and some don't, you know. And it's sad when they don't, because the people are the life, you know, the lifeline, the blood of the team. You know, they're the oxygen of a club, of a soccer club. But some people just don't give, you know, two fucks. And that's their prerogative. You know, they see it as an investment that, you know, if it's not good, they'll sell it. Or if they're making money, they'll keep it or whatever it may be, right? But, you know, the way that people saw soccer in 1986 was, this is our vacation. This is our way to escape the bullshit from our government, to escape the bullshit of my brother was sent to a war to get killed because we didn't even have guns. You know, like, they were literally sending kids to die with no guns. And it was like in the winter. The war was in the winter. They didn't have proper, like, coats. Like, people were sending coats that they owned to soldiers at war, you know what I mean? And then on the other side, you had, you know, the British Navy, the British soldiers, you know, backed by, you know, the biggest powers in the world, and you know, planes and shit like that. Like, Argentinians at one point in time, the government was calling Argentinians to give up, you know, to donate money to the government so they can buy weapons, they can buy bullets. Like, they didn't have bullets, you know what I mean? Like, how do you go to war with no bullets, right? Argentina did, right? And the people, you know, as Argentinians as they were, they gave their, you know, some people gave their cars, some people sold their houses and gave their money, some people sold their jewelry and gave their money to the government. And what happened was that the government ended up pocketing the money. And, you know, they wouldn't send them anything. They wouldn't send the kids of Malvinas. You know, like, when we sing the songs, like, if you ever listen or pay attention to the songs that Argentinians sing, we don't say soldiers of Malvinas. We say pibes of Malvinas, young men. Because at the end of the day, it was a bunch of 18 to 22-year-old dudes that were just picked out of their homes. You know, are you able-bodied? Well, guess what, buddy? You're getting on a ship and you're going to an island to probably go get murdered by a British plane. You know what I mean? So, you know, this is like borderline whatever, and I'm going for forever now, but it is what it is. Hopefully you're staying for this conversation. But, you know, winning a World Cup got rid of all those issues for a while. You know, go out there, celebrate for once. Get out on the streets, be happy. Hug your mom, hug your sister, hug your brother if you still have them. Hug your parent, hug your dad, you know, hug your uncles, whoever it may be, you know. If that man of the house was still alive, hug him, you know. And then, you know, with the government being, you know, a dictatorship, you know, if you stood up against it, they would just literally pick you up and make you disappear. And there's like a whole movement in Argentina called Las Abuelas de Mayo, Las Mamás de Mayo. And it's just like a bunch of women that their kids would disappear because their kids, you know, had the balls to kind of say something against the government. And then the next day they would just come get them and, you know, that's it. That was the end of them, you know. And it's hundreds and hundreds of names and dudes that were just kind of made disappear by the government. So, like, you know, it's a whole social thing for us. And soccer, it's like one of the good things, one of the few things that we're good at in a way. And that's what keeps us in a happy place. So that kind of, like, you know, moves that around. So that was 86, you know, and having Maradona is like, you know, having like a, you know, I might use some religious content or religious talk, but literally in Argentina, like, soccer has become some part of a religion because it's the only thing that kind of makes you feel good. And, you know, religion is, it's something that you kind of follow to feel good in a way. So soccer has become a religion, you know, in a way. Maybe not good, but at the end of the day, it makes people happy. So if it makes people happy, why not, you know, hold it at a high standard or you know, venerate it in a way. And yes, like I said before, it is a game. But I think at the end of the day, for us as Argentinians, and it's weird because I'm young, you know. I didn't live through wars. Nobody in my family got sent to die that I know of. You know, my dad, like I said, he skipped the war because he was a little bit too young. And he was 14 or 15 when he actually saw the whole ordeal, you know, go through and happen. And I remember, like, there's a big thing that happened in Argentina where a group of rebels, you know, quote unquote, they tried to take over a military post that was literally a few blocks away from my dad's house at the time. And it's a whole new thing. I think like 20 dudes got killed from there. Like, they try to take over a military post, and their idea was to like steal tanks and drive them all the way to the capital and like demand that the people like step down. It was the whole dictatorship. And my dad was a young guy, and my dad tells me the story. Like, he was like, I was going to work, dude. Like, I was 13, 14, 15 years old. And, you know, he's like, I had a job and I was going to work. And you just start hearing shots, pa, 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 pa. And it's literally the military fighting against like a group of 15 men that went in into this military post, and they were shooting back at the militaries from, you know, they were outside trying to gain control back of their post. So, you know, a bunch of shit. I don't know where I was going, but the whole point is that I didn't have to live through any of that, you know. I didn't have it bad. You know, I was lucky enough to have parents that worked, parents that were pretty independent. And, you know, when they kind of saw, you know, the shit almost hitting the fan in early 2000, they decided to come to the United States. And I was lucky enough to be brought, you know, to this great country. And, you know, as an immigrant, I came and, you know, we reside here in Houston. That was our first city. We just came straight to Houston. And, you know, that's where we've been since, right? But now, you know, as you grow older as a little immigrant child, in a way, you're kind of torn because you don't really belong here, in a way, right? Like, I couldn't work legally till I was, like, 20 years old. And I remember, like, when I got a good job, you know, with my right proper paperwork, I had, you know, my boss would ask me, like, so, you know, have you ever been back to Argentina? And I'd be like, nah, bro, like, I can't go back. And he, like, in his head, till this day, we actually became friends afterwards. And till this day, he'll be like, okay, explain to me why you can't leave the country. And I just can't leave the country, bro. Like, I can't leave. I just can't, you know what I mean? Like, it's just part of life for me. I grew up like that kind of knowing that I'm not going to see any of my people ever again. And it's sad, but at least I have one thing that kind of unites us, which is this passion that we both have. You know, my cousins that I grew up with in Argentina, like, now they're my age, and I don't know if I'll ever see them again, you know, depending on, like, my life is basically at the mercy of politics, in a way. And like, I can't do certain things with my life because, you know, just because I was wrong in the wrong patch of dirt or whatever it may be, right? But I'm not American fully, right? I don't have all the rights. And then at the same time, I'm Argentinian, but like, am I really Argentinian? Because I grew up in the United States. So how Argentinian can a person be if they grew up in a whole other country, you know, with different cultures, different language? You know, I'm doing a podcast in English. You know what I mean? Like, and my first, you know, tongue, my first lingua, my first language was Spanish. And when I speak to my cousins in Spanish, you know, they're like, whoa, like, you have a weird accent. And I'm like, bro, like, I have an accent in English and I have an accent in Spanish. Like, you just don't belong in. And I'm sure, you know, some of you guys that are immigrants or children of immigrants will probably feel the same. But, you know, it's just one of those things that you just kind of learn to live with. You know what I mean? And it is what it is. You either let that dictate your life and how you're going to feel about yourself, or you just kind of rise up and move up, right? And me rising up and moving up was just kind of like digging deep into my roots, right? And when I dig deep into my roots, I find soccer. I mean, I grew up with soccer. I've been playing competitive soccer. None of this, you know, not to trash FFFPS, but, you know, I've been playing competitive soccer since I was like 4 years old. You know, going to training twice a week, having games on the weekend, you know, traveling to hostile, you know, quote unquote, neighborhoods to play against other rival clubs and teams, you know, since I was like 5, 6 years old. I mean, my first tryouts were, I was 4, literally. And you get to a team of the youngest is the 5 year old team that they have, and you play 5 years old to the age of 12. You play what we call in Argentina baby football, which is a 5v5 in concrete. And then once you kind of graduate from 5v5, you move on into the grass. You know, by that time you're like 12, 13 years old, and if you are any good, then you go try out for the big clubs. I remember when I was 8 years old, before coming to Argentina, I actually went. I had some cousins that were training for Lanús. You know, some of you guys might know the team or not. But Lanús is, you know, one of those mid-table clubs in a way, right? Like, here and there, they'll win a cup. You know, they'll have a really good season. But, you know, Lanús at that time, it was just kind of like a mid-table club. But, you know, a lot of good players come out of those teams. So I went and tried out for Lanús at 8 years old, and I made the team at 8 years old. But I remember a few months afterwards, like, my parents decided that, you know, we were coming to the United States, so I had to stop going to train. So we just kind of, like, you know, we came to United States, and it's crazy because my cousins, some of them ended up going to Boca Juniors, who I'm a, you know, giant fan of, and they played for Boca for a few years too, like in their, you know, lower divisions. So who knows, maybe, you know, if I would have stayed over there, I could have played in the, you know, I'm not saying I would have became pro, because honestly I don't think so. Like, I play soccer, but I'm not like pro level, right? But it would have been cool just to say, like, oh shit, like, I played in the, you know, inferiores of Boca. Like, I had a year or two where I played, you know, in the lower divisions, in the academy of Boca. That would have been dope. But, you know, it's just one of those things that, like, going back to my point, I go everywhere in my story. But going back to my point, the only thing that me and, like, my cousins now have in common is soccer, and the fact that we support the same teams, or we support different teams, because I have some cousins that are River Plate fans, and, you know, when it comes to talking shit, you know, we talk shit. But at the end of the day, we're still family, right? But, you know, it brings us together. You know, the shit talking, or the camaraderie. I can't say that word. Camaraderie. The brotherhood. You know, there you go. The brotherhood that we, like, put together, that's, like, what brings us together in a way. And it's just soccer. It's just, you know, the love for football, the love for our colors, the love for our selección. And that's what we are seeing now. Like, now, you know, every time we see the colors, and every time we sing the national anthem. I was talking to one of my wife's cousins yesterday. He's from Chile. And we were talking about how beautiful it is when we hear our anthem. And it's something that here in the United States, you don't experience. Because, like, Americans don't. Unless you're like military, which military people tend to be a little bit more patriotic than most, right? And they salute, and they kind of understand a little bit deeper the love they have for their national anthem. But, like, when you are from a foreign country, your national anthem, it's like the only thing you have. It's like that's like the deepest root you have, you know, planted in you, you know? Because here, you know, you go to any sporting event and there's, you know, the anthem. You go to this place, the anthem. You go to this place, the like, you kind of get desensitized. Is that a word? I don't know. But, like, your sensitivity for the anthem kind of, like, just fades away, because you hear so often that it's just, like, another song. And you have respect for it, because, you know, it means, you know, it talks about your country, and you respect your country or whatever it may be, right? But when you hear your national anthem, like, when you're away from home, you're like, damn, dude, like, this takes me back to my home, like, you know, to my initial home, to my birthplace. And like, me and him, we were talking, and we were just kind of comparing, you know, how chilly, you know, how much chills your body gets when you hear your national anthem. And it's just the craziest thing, because, you know, when I see these international games and you hear the anthem, you're like, damn, dude, like, I could cry right now. And it's like, I only lived there 8 years, but I could cry right now just because of this fucking anthem, you know? And it's crazy because now as we see Argentina advancing and advancing, last time Argentina was in the World, like, they got to the final, it was 2014. I was 8 years ago. I'm 30 now, so I was 22. I was still kind of young, and I was still finding myself in a way, right? Like, I have the idea that you don't really become yourself till like you're in your late 20s, you know, when your brain stops developing in a way, or like it's fully developed in your late 20s. So I feel like now, you know, the Christian you see now at 30 years old is like just me. It's just who I am, period, you know, with my flaws and my, you know, good things. That's just who I am, period. And at 22, I was just all over the fucking place, you know, trying to find myself, you know, how to dress, who to impress. Like, now I could care less. You know, my wife tells me, dude, like, you're not even matching. I'm like, I really don't care about matching. I just care about comfort right now, you know, like, so I'll wear this because I don't care. You know, like, you're not trying to impress anybody, especially after you're married and, you know, you have kids or whatever it may be. Like, it's like, babe, I'm not here for bitches. like I could care less if girls look at me or not, or even other dudes look at me or not. Like, sometimes, you know, I'll dress up or I'll look good. You know what I mean? Because, you know, who doesn't want to look good? But who cares, you know? But I don't know what my point was, but finding yourself. But yeah, like in the 20s, you're still trying to impress people. You're still trying to impress girls. You're still trying to impress, you know, your friends or whatever it might be. And now, you know, at 30 years old, I have a different thinking. And I have a different idea. So even the way that I see a World Cup, or even the way that I see soccer, I've learned so much in the past, literally in the past 2-3 years since I started, you know, working with Dynamo Theory, that, you know, talking to people that are knowledgeable and in some cases, like, some of these dudes know a lot more than me. And, you know, it's fun getting into conversations with people that know, you know, equally, you know, about soccer, that have played competitive soccer, maybe in college level or, you know, even Sunday leagues. But, you know, they're still competitive and they understand, like, soccer as a, like, in the essence of the sport. You know what I mean? And they understand tactics, understand, you know, different ideas, philosophies, or whatever it may be, like, it, and you learn a lot of things, and just kind of makes you a better person all around when it comes to soccer. So this year I'm experiencing this, like, honestly, this feels like my first World Cup ever, you know, because I feel like all the other ones, I was a child, you know, going back to 98, my first memory in 98, July 4th, 1998, Argentina gets kicked out by Netherlands. It was my first memory that I have of, like, damn, dude, like, we just got kicked out by the Netherlands, and I hate the Netherlands, even though I don't even know where it is. I don't even know what that is. I just don't like the orange team. Like, you know, 6 years old, who cares? I just don't like them, period. And then, you know, 2002 is my first World Cup here, and it was Japan, Korea. And, you know, waking up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning to watch those games, and, you know, you're just a little kid, you know, just kind of trying to live life, you know, 12, 13 years old, you're like, hell yeah, I love soccer, dude, and just trying to try to watch every game or whatever. Then fast forward, 2006, you know, you're still a kid. 2010, I was a little bit grown. 2014 was like, I was 22, so I was a little bit, you know, I was getting to be more mature, whatever it may be. And then Russia, you know, last time, you know, I was watching it, but I wasn't really deep into soccer as I am now. I still watched it as, you know, I want my country to do good, but, you know, it's just like, I don't know. 2014 had left such a bad taste in our mouth that 2018 was like, fuck it. Like, if we win, we win. If we don't, we don't, type of thing, at least in my head. But 2022, finally, I guess, closing up on this long-ass podcast that I thought it was going to be 20 minutes long, and I don't know if any of y'all are going to continue to listen to, but 2022 has been the first Mundial, the first World Cup that I'm trying to work it more in the realm of journalism. I'm trying to get into that now that I'm 30, and I kind of know what I want to do in my life, which is I want to get into the world of soccer, like immerse myself in it some way or another, you know, via journalism, via, you know, calling games, writing about them, you know, just following it, however it may be, making content, making podcasts, making videos, or whatever it may be. But I want, you know, soccer to be my main job. I want a round spherical ball with 20 dudes running behind it to be the reason why I make my living the way that I make it, you know? I don't know how I'm going to do it. As of right now, it's just a hobby, and it can be expensive at times. It can be time-consuming at times, but I love every second of it, and I know my family loves it, and they love to see me happy, and they know that this makes me happy, so they support it. So shout out to my family. But, you know, this is the first World Cup that I'm actually, like, kind of putting my soul into it, my soul, my heart, and my might, and my time, and my, you know, abilities to think and try to watch every game and analyze the game as a game and everything that comes with it. And it has become, you know, one of the greatest experiences of my life, to be honest. I mean, Argentina in the final, and it just means a lot because it literally takes me back all the way back to everything, you know. And I'm probably going to experience the final alone, but I know the first thing that I'm going to do, whatever that happens, you know, after that game, and if it goes well, the first thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to call my dad. And I'm going to, like, say thank you, you know? Like I've been thinking about it all day, and I might be crying right now, but, you know, just let me be. But I'm going to call my dad, and I'm just going to say thank you. You know, thank you for giving me something beautiful to kind of look at or cheer for, or just a passion that makes no fucking sense. Like, I shouldn't be crying for soccer. You know, I shouldn't be this invested emotionally. I shouldn't be invested, you know, this much in whatever the fuck I'm doing right now, you know? I shouldn't be having 50 minutes of talks and hoping people listen to it. But, you know, I'm just going to call him and just say thanks. You know, thanks for making me, you know, thanks for, you know, showing me what, you know, what a good man is, you know, has to be like, and you know, and a good dad. And thank you for showing me what soccer is, man, and showing me the way of how to support and not talk shit, being a good fan, you know, being a supportive fan, you know, even in the bad times, you know, just staying there with your colors, your teams, to basically knowing, teaching me how to love, and, you know, how to love this game. And at the end of the day, like I said, it's just a game, but to us Argentinians, it's a moment that we escape. It's a moment of happiness. It's a moment that we are not ourselves. And yes, we do give it to these players to, you know, we put all the responsibility on their backs, but I think, you know, they know what they mean to us, and they know that, like, they'll be immortalized, win or lose on Sunday, they'll be in history forever. And, you know, history in Argentina is written in games. It's not written in, you know, founding fathers. It's written in soccer games and how many goals and how you score goals. You know, it's written in just statistics in a way. So they'll be in history forever for sure. And I'm just glad that I was part of it, you know, and I'm just glad that I was covering it for somebody, that somebody is watching, somebody's listening. And I'm glad that I was part of it. And I'm glad I was part of this journey for you as well. So with that being said, I know I rambled a lot, and hopefully you guys enjoyed it or somewhat. But at the end of the day, podcasting for me is a little bit of therapy. So shout out to you coming to my therapy sessions. But hopefully you don't charge me. But yeah, man. But yeah, don't forget, go follow the podcast, and don't forget to follow the YouTube channel. Don't forget to follow Instagram, Twitter, whatever it may be. And hopefully you guys stay tuned. 2023 is going to be a better year. We're going to have a lot better things. And don't forget, let me know if you know somebody that you would like to have on the podcast, whatever it may be. Maybe, do you know any Moroccans? Do you know any French people? Let me know. So I would love to talk to them. So without further ado, thank you guys. Y'all have a good day, a good morning, a good night.